Thank you. Just in terms of housekeeping, commissioners, this table is a supplementary short piece of evidence, and really for your information, purely this attachment, just a Google Earth image showing property boundaries. And on the rear side of that is information about land ownership, which may not be of use to you, but I thought it included the benefit. Just intend to read through my supplementary. This statement of supplementary evidence is written in response to matters raised by Ms. Devlin in her summary of evidence dated 21 July 2017. Ms. Devlin recommends the submitter's rezoning request to rezone the land from rural general to rural visitor zone to be rejected due to the scale anticipated by the Opera District and rural visitor zone being incompatible with the reserve's conservation, historic heritage and recreation values. I respectfully disagree. In my opinion, there is no evidence, which I'm aware of, to suggest that the scale of development anticipated in the Operative District Plan Rural Visitor Zone is incompatible with the reserve's conservation, historic heritage, and recreation values. On the contrary, I believe there is a very low risk that any conservation and heritage values of land will be significantly threatened. The land is owned by the Crown and is administered by the Department of Conservation in accordance with the respective requirements of the Reserves Act and the Conservation Act. Council's landscape and ecological evidence does not oppose a rezoning request on landscape or ecological grounds. Archaeological values are protected by the Heritage Zero Pohiti Tailman Act, and there are no listed or identified heritage features on the land. The rural visitor zone does not permit development or activities that would undermine or significantly degrade the values associated with the land. In this regard, the effects of development can be managed through the resource consent process and applicable provisions in the district-wide chapters. For example, the provisions in Chapter 22 manage earthworks, and buildings in the rural visitor zone are controlled in respect of, among other things, adverse effects on landscape and visual amenity values, nature conservation values, and the natural character of the rural environment. Table 1 below compares the activity status of the established activities on the land against the rural visitor zone and the proposed rural general zone. In my opinion, the activity statuses of the rural visitor zone are more aligned to the nature and scale of the existing activities on the land compared to the proposed district plan rural zone. So, I won't go through the table, but just a comparative exercise there. Having regard to the above matters, I conclude the scale of development and activities provided for in the rural visitor zone will not be incompatible with the reserve's conservation, historic heritage, and recreation values. Fit with the proposed district plan framework. In my opinion, it should be relatively easy to fit rural visitor zone provisions into the structure of the proposed district plan. And I give two examples. Firstly, a new rural visitor zone chapter could be inserted into the proposed district plan. The contents of the chapter could mirror the operative district plan provisions in respect of the zone purpose, objectives, policies, and rules. And there I relate to or refer back to the operative rural visitor zone provisions. Alternatively, Chapter 21 could be amended to include bespoke rural visitor subzone provisions. In a similar way, that zone provides a rural industry subzone. The amendments could include a new paragraph in 21.1 explaining the subzone purpose. Again, this could be similar to say as the operative rules of design purpose. a new objective and associated policies in 21.2. Again, these could be the same or similar to those set out in the operative plan. And a new rules table in 21.5, setting out subzone activities and standards. And again, these could be the same or similar as those set out in the rules of the zone. The operative plan. Additionally, new bespoke provisions could be inserted into the above framework. In this case, I refer to the submission from Naikahu, it seems appropriate, based on the evidence of Ms. Banks and Mr. Glasner, to manage the effects of new residential development on public infrastructure via a discretionary status. I have reviewed the strategic direction provisions in Chapter 3, as notified, and I cannot see the inclusion of a rural visitor zone or a rural visitor subzone into the proposed shipping framework would be inconsistent with the direction given. Another matter is the O&L boundary location. Dr. Reid considers that the O&L could be moved to exclude the site. This position is not opposed by any party and would partly address the concerns raised in the submission by Naitapu Tourism Board. I therefore consider it would be appropriate to exclude the land from the O&L. Conclusion. Zoning the land rural visitor is not incompatible with the reserve's conservation, historic heritage, or recreation values. Zoning the land rural visitor can fit within the proposed district plan framework, and the relief sought by Naitahu Tourism can be partly implemented by many of the district plan maps to exclude the land from the O&L. What do you mean the potential development anticipated?
Well, I understand the rural visitor zone. It's a performed zone. Mm. So setting aside the reserve there, and so on, looks like the image. Dr. Green has been in the government for doing that sort of thing nationally. Mm. So you could end up with quite intensive accommodation, for example, on that side.
Yes, and I'm relying to, in respect of the values, natural values, that Dr. Reid has identified, that the land's not outstanding. It could accommodate urban development or rural visitor type development. Similarly, the evidence Council's own ecologist, experience there. And more to the point, I think, while the zone is permissive, the framework is there to manage effects, albeit via the controlled activity status.
Control activity. Yeah. So you're relaxed about, really potentially relaxed, setting aside the reserve status. Quite relaxed about a fairly intensive urban type development on that land.
Yes, but in the context of what's there, I can't see how practically a potential development would be severe on the impact of that land or the area. But, I mean, the context is it's historically a visitor attraction destination. It's got dock offices and a workshop. Yes, that could move on in time, but it's a visitor destination. I would note that the earthworks chapter is not particularly permissive. And certainly the effects of earthworks in terms of natural buildings would likely be discretionary for any development. And I would add that the rules and provisions are still to be reviewed, and so I'm not sure whether or not it can or would affect this stage of the proposed district plan, but from a practical point of view, I would assume that any provisions that you may introduce to do with the submitter's relief requested, I'd like to think that there's an ability for them to marry up with whatever the council intends on doing in the future around the rules of design. How that can be achieved, I don't know, but it seems practical that they should all.
Just following up on, given that the council, well, if you know, I don't know what the council is going to do with that zone, isn't it sort of jumping the gun to reinsert it into the proposed district plan from the one side? And actually, this isn't the only side that really this is going on. I mean, would that restrict the council's ability to do a more ground-up review of the role with the design when it comes to doing
it? I don't think it restricts it, because it has the ability to vary whatever the outcome is of this process, or to re-review this process. I think it's unfortunate that we can't consider those provisions at this time. We don't know what the council intends to do with it, but I think it would be highly unfair on submitters to hold them back requesting that type of provision, which is in the offer on the basis that the council hasn't got around to doing it.
Any other way that your client's business concerns could be linked to those subsequent review of the rule with the provision
that was drawn from this chapter and re-notified at a later date is one mechanism. Directing the council and submitters, experts to have a discussion, for example, planning experts, about how the rural visitor zone provision could be amended or could be introduced into the proposed district plan to provide you with some feedback. I think you can direct the experts to come up with an opinion whether we agree or disagree. Well, it would have to be accompanied by a level of understanding that it would be full back to the operative zoning, and that the zoning of that land would be up for grabs again.
Well, the operative zone is below the field.
Yes. And of course, another option is to proceed with the rural visitor zone under the proposed district plan framework.
Yes, but you made that quite good.
guess that I don't think they would know the answer to that far out, at least that they've devolved to me. My understanding that Maitahu, as well as the Department of Conservation, as well as Real Journeys, being the three tourism operators, major landowners or administrators of activities on that reserve, are all heavily invested in tourism development and activities. And I think it would be logical that any development in that area would be commensurate with the visitor attractiveness of that land. There'd be business and revenue generating elements to those decisions, but I'm speculating in that respect. I do know there is some discussion happening around working out the future of that land between parties, but I don't know what their actual intentions are.
In Ms. Devlin's assessment of the capacity of the land for residential, I think she came up with something like 338 lines. You regarded that as excessive. She modified her position to 200. Have you assessed what is practically possible?
No, I haven't, and my assumption is that at least while the parties I've mentioned are involved in the administration of the land, you wouldn't be looking at a residential type development. That's my assumption. But for example, your reverse sensitivity issues with the jet boating operation, is effectively an industrial workshop there that the dock operates.
I was wanting to know really whether or not you had calibrated her estimate with anything more concrete than...
No, I haven't.
Do you have a view yourself based on any other calculation of what might be the residential
capacity? No, I generally don't envisage that there would be much residential activity there at all.
Well, maybe so, but it's enabled by rural visitor zoning, so I'd like to know what's possible. It may not always be
Correct.
Someone else.
And my evidence, I hadn't said that the residential aspect could be elevated to discretionary. And probably should, based on the evidence. And I think the rules of design, while it's under the operative provisions, is permissive of density around controlled activity for residential. There's nothing stopping you from managing and restricting the effects of residential development on this particular piece.
In the table you've provided in the summary, which shows the activities and their status for the two different zones, I see that difference, but I don't understand how this table shows that the scale of development provided for will not be incompatible with the reserves. How does anyone know what the scale is from looking at that table?
They don't, that table's not intended to.
So that's why I'm asking questions about residential capacity to get a sense of what scale is.
I mean, to extend my response to your questioning around residential density, I don't see how particularly relevant that actually might be if the focus is on the outcome or the effect on the environment. Certainly there's a density...
It's relevant to traffic.
Yeah, so infrastructure.
Relevant to the OEL, because it's still it's in an
OEL. Well, I don't see the density as being relevant to the OEL. I certainly see the outcomes on the OEL, and then I rely on Dr. Reed for her outcome that it could be absorbed within that environment, or the O&L could be shifted, or whatever her precise views are. Certainly, density of residential activity will have an impact on the infrastructure, including the boating infrastructure, and that's where I say it's therefore appropriate to restrict or manage that specifically.
Okay,
But as a bulk and location matter or design matter, I think that can, the scale development can be appropriately managed under the control framework.
Has there been any, well, just going around to effects then and finishing off traffic, has there been any work done on assessing the effect of the existing intensity of use of this brothel dam on the capacity of the, obviously the bridge, but just generally at that intersection?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
In the whole line of questioning from Commissioner Crawford on residential density, etc. Was that visitor accommodation?
Yes.
Is there a scale of visitor accommodation envisaged on the site?
Not that I'm aware of specifically, but logic follows from my previous response that any impacts of visitor accommodation infrastructure should be managed. The controlled activity framework, as I understand it, matters of control include infrastructure and the ability to service the site.
Yes, but that doesn't enable you to limit or restrict what has been applied for, does it? In a controlled activity, you can only impose conditions, and the conditions might be improve the infrastructure. But they can't negate the application, the consent. So if you propose a 24 hotel as a controlled activity, you can't actually say you've only had three floors.
No, but presumably you can say you have to consent with the applicant would have to construct and fund the upgrades required, presumably.
Only to the extent that doesn't negate the consent. You can't put conditions on the site owners that actually couldn't provide.
Equally, there must be some teeth in that controlled matter to require the necessary site services to facilitate the activity. That would be my assumption. If it is that cannot impose, if the law is, or if the way the rules of matters of control are interpreted, that it would end up in the situation you're alluding to, then I don't think it's appropriate that such density or an outcome should occur or should happen under the control activity status. And it should be a matter of discretion. I understand, or certainly assume, that through the control activity status, council has enough power as a decision maker to impose the infrastructure required to meet the needs of that development.
I'm confused by that, Mr. Chair, because the evidence of Mr. Fraser is that the infrastructure that's needed is going to be is difficult to. So that goes back to the whole problem that the chair pointed out about the can't impose conditions that negate the effect of consent.
But I think we're talking hypotheticals because Mr. Glass is based on very large density of infrastructure.
Oh, yes, but you haven't provided the evidence to help us know what the alternative is.
No.
So how can we do anything but deal with what we have?
Well, I think you could take what I've said in my evidence and what Mr. Glasner and Ms. Bax have said in their evidence and potentially carve out the activities which generate those matters of concern and elevate them to a discretionary status. Based on discussion today, it would be residential and visitor accommodation.